would like you to be a little louder.
You'd like me to be a little louder. Okay. Hold on, let me try something. Okay, how about now? That better?
Maybe a little.
Are you
And
sure?
it's,
Are you sure it's just not your are you your volume up?
well, hold on. All right. I don't have my hearing aids in.
Well, that could maybe be it.
What? Thanks a lot.
Welcome to You're on Mute with me, Pastor Elise, and the coolest boomer you'll ever meet, my mom, Pastor Mary.
I know. Well, it's so exciting that you are doing this transition, and we are going to talk about transitions
That's
today. Why
right.
not?
Why not? I mean, it's like, let's just get to it. Let's dig into what's going on in our life and ministry. Talk about it while it's raw, people.
That's right. Before Elise gets all happy and content and everything.
Yeah, before I start having faith in this call again, this
Yeah.
calling, I should say. Yeah, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. And you're like the queen of transitions now because
Know.
of your interim responsibilities. So it's not something that churches do very well.
Well, I mean, I was thinking about that, Elise, and leaving interims is usually fine because I'm leaving because they've called a new person. And that was my whole purpose in being there, was to get them ready for that. So that's usually fine. People are always sad and, they kind of give you a good party, but my regular calls I think only my first one did I leave under what I felt like was kind of normal, good circumstances. The one in St. Paul's in Evanston was, I guess, I don't know. It was like some of them felt betrayed that I mean, I just left to go to another call, but the whole thing of, we didn't even know you were looking. Why didn't you tell us? I thought I was close to you. Just kind of the disappointment. It's almost like for the congregation, discovering that your spouse is having an affair and what they're telling you is, I'm leaving you for someone else. And
No,
I can see why it would feel that way.
Yeah, there are a lot of people that have described kind of the uncoupling of a congregation and a pastor very similar to the feeling of divorce or kind of ending a very personal relationship. And it really is. I mean, you're intertwined in so many ways, and it's in a lot of ways you kind of want it to be at least painful in some sense, right? It's like if it's like, oh, thank God we're done with each other, then how, what was going on with the ministry there? But you also don't want it to traumatize people. And that is, I think, where the church could do a little bit better. I'm not a big fan of the secrecy
I know.
that goes on. I think there certainly needs to be boundaries. But I wish kind of across the board there was a little bit more transparency. And I think I would have said that even before the current mess.
I feel like the only time that the transition is easy on both the pastor and the congregation and much more transparent is when the pastor announces that he or she is retiring in a year or 6 months or whatever it is. It's all out there. Everybody expects it. There's enough time to plan a nice party, and all that sort of thing. So nobody gets surprised. I mean, people may be disappointed, but when you reach a certain age, people kind of expect it. They know when your 65th birthday was.
Expected and maybe in some cases wanted.
Right. But even if they don't, it's transparent. The congregation can start, has a little bit of time to start thinking about what do we want to do next and all of that. But you know, why the whole process can't be like that is mystifying.
I mean, and even like, I think we're so stuck on, like, with my situation with Trinity, it was not a normal transition
No, in
out
so
of
many
ministry
ways.
in so many ways. And I felt like there was never really a official, quote, official recognition of the special situation. Like, people were trying, people in the congregation, people in the synod office, myself included, like, we were all trying so hard to put it in this familiar box that the situation just would not fit in. And maybe one day it would, but the next day it wouldn't. And there was just never this recognition of, like, this is weird, so we're going to treat it like it's its own thing. There was plenty of recognizing how weird it was, but then it was like, so we're going to keep trying to cram it into the way we know how to do things.
Well, for our dozens of listeners around the world that don't know exactly what your situation, can you just kind of give a brief summary? And then we can talk about the transitions, I guess.
I'll give a brief summary of kind of what just happened with me. And then I think, too, kind of explaining, I guess, what the quote normal way or kind of what the expectations might be in terms of pastors leaving. So for my particular crazy shit show of a situation, I was called to Trinity Lutheran as the associate in 2020. I started January of 2020 and served on a two-pastor staff for 3 years. And at the end of my 3rd year, my co-pastor decided to take a call elsewhere to be closer to family, totally within his, right to do that. And it was a good move for him and his family. But that was certainly traumatic for the congregation. They were not expecting it.
And
People.
he had said that he was going to stay till he retired.
He
So
did.
that made it a surprise. Not that he had to
Yes.
do that.
Right. I mean, we all best laid plans, right? Like, but yeah, he had kind of hinted to people that he was going to be around for a while. And when I was hired or called as the associate, it was with the impression that when my co-pastor did retire, which at that point was 6, 7 years down the road, I would move into the senior role. So I was actually called there with the expectation that that transition would happen at some point. Not that it was going to be given to me. I still needed to earn it, but that was the expectation. So kind of like, surprise, I'm leaving. And it happened at the end of the year. So holidays were happening and all of this. And people were just kind of left mystified. Like, did we do something wrong? Was he not happy here? Like, they wanted to throw a goodbye party and that didn't happen for multiple different reasons. So we were all just kind of left holding this like question. And then the big question next was, well, what's going to happen to Elise? Like, what's going to happen with us now? And my co-pastor and I had been talking really for about a year up to that point about the fact that while Trinity was solid in its finances and its growth, it really didn't make a lot of sense for it to be a two-pastor full-time, a two full-time pastor church anymore. So we were kind of already talking internally about planting that seed with the council and the congregation that at some point in the future, Trinity would need to think about moving to a solo pastor congregation or a full-time pastor and a part-time person. So those ideas were already rolling.
Right.
So December of 22, December of 22, council meets, with bishop office representatives. The bishop himself came over, and basically, what made the situation weird, extra weird, was that we were going from a two pastor church to a solo pastor church. So, because I was called as the associate, my call would essentially be disappearing once a new solo pastor was called. So that's what made it extra weird and tricky, was like, if we were continuing the way we wanted to, or the way, you know, they'd gone with two pastors, then I would have stayed in my associate role. They would have brought in an interim senior pastor. That person would have been the senior pastor, and then until we did the call process for a new senior, blah, blah, blah. But we did not do that. So the congregation was given an option in February of 23 that basically said, hey, so I know Stan leaving was, or my co-pastor was not, everyone knows it was Stan. Stan leaving was not necessarily a surprise, but it was also not planned, but that has happened. So now you have Pastor Elise. And so you do not have a pastoral vacancy. You have a pastor, but you are moving from two pastors to one. And so you need to take some time and figure out if you want to go through a call process with Elise as a candidate, or if you want to not do a call process and just vote on reissuing Elise's call and then going from there. So that's what they were told in February of 23. A lot of back and forth happened in the following 3 to 4 months. What the decision the congregation was making was redefined several times. People were very confused. People were not really sure kind of what was going on. And so ultimately the council made the executive decision to not have a congregational vote and to just do a call process with me as a candidate. So that was kind of, in hindsight, trust breaker number one, right? Like, people in the congregation were kind of mystified. I thought we had a vote coming. Why, you know, weren't we supposed to have a say in this decision? All that. So anyway, that was post Easter of 23. And then I basically just held down the fort for the rest of the year, operated as the solo pastor, as the interim, as the candidate. I was considered as a candidate, got to the second round of interviews. They were initially given 5 names, including mine. And then it, you know, some people took other calls, this and that. But ultimately the decision was made by the call committee, to not continue with me as a candidate for the call at Trinity,
or anyone else.
That is true. They could not decide on anyone. And this was, I was told this the week after Thanksgiving. And it was not, I think, like, the best way I've been able to say it is, I wasn't surprised, but I was shocked.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. Like, you know, the writing was on the wall. I knew that I was facing an uphill battle. There were certain folks that, because of, you know, some of the missteps or instances that happened in my earlier time with Trinity, just never really forgave me for it. You know, I just knew there were going to be a handful of folks I was never going to win back, or never really had in the first place, and were never going to get. But the turnaround, I think the reason I was shocked was because of how good things were going.
Mm-hmm.
With Trinity as a congregation, our attendance was up. New members were coming in left, right, and center. Financially, we were in a good position. I mean, the energy in worship was just amazing. But for reasons not really known to me, they decided that it would not be in the best interest for us to continue together. So, so that happened. And then I was basically told that I would be able to stay on through like mid-January. I did allow them to have a goodbye thing because it was important for me to leave well. December and that first half of January felt like presiding at my own funeral every Sunday. It was really sad. It was really traumatic for me and the majority of the congregation.
And your farewell reception was very much like a funeral reception.
It really was. I mean, it was, I knew that there would be people that would be disappointed, that would be sad. I was not quite prepared for just how devastated a lot of people were. And it wasn't necessarily just because I wasn't going to be the pastor anymore. Like, I'm not all that in a bag of chips, but it was the feeling of betrayal that people felt, not necessarily coming from me, but from the people making the decisions. The feelings of being excluded from the decision-making process, of not having their voices heard. That's what I kept hearing was, you know, I thought we were going to have a say in this. I thought there was going to be a vote. I thought there were people that were like, we just thought you were a shoe-in. So we just didn't really, you know,
didn't pay attention.
We didn't really pay attention. You know, I mean, it was tough to be a part of, and it was tough to watch. So my last Sunday was January 14th. And they have an interim now. And that person will be with them until they call someone new. So God bless and Godspeed.
And now you, as of today, are going to be pastor where?
As of today, I am the new pastor at St. John Lutheran Church in Abingdon, Virginia.
Woohoo!
So yes, they voted today. I would have done this as well, but with the advice of the bishop early on in the year, I did start kind of looking at what some of my options would be in case, you know, either I decided to move on or Trinity decided to move on. And I'm glad I did, because I came across this wonderful congregation in Southwest Virginia. And it was one of those, from the first time I met with their call committee over Zoom, you could just tell it was a special group. It's kind of like, you know, and they hung in there, because there was a time when I kind of told them I'm just not ready to jump ship yet. And they were kind of ready to move forward. And thank God, you know, a month or month and a half or 2 months went by. And when I reached out to them, even before really too much stuff went crazy, but I just wasn't feeling like it was going to go in my way. I said, hey, are y'all still taking names? And they said, yeah. So we were able to just kind of pick up where we left off. And I'm really lucky. It's a great group, and I'm excited to get going and get working with them. And I'm excited. So now we just have to move, which is super fun. It'll be hard to say goodbye to Chattanooga in a lot of ways, and the life we've made and the life we thought we were going to have.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of reconciling to be done. We feel like, while we are very excited about the future, and when I say we, I'm saying myself and Adam, we feel like a lot has been taken from us.
Mm-hmm.
As well, as much as we are excited about what's to come, we're also grieving kind of what could have been, what we thought was happening, and kind of, you know, what our expectations were for the future. But I found a soft place to land, and I'm really grateful for that. So
yeah, and so yeah. There's so many dynamics when you move or are forced mm-hmm. to move from one situation to the other.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I was talking about how probably the easiest transition is the, so I'm retiring next year, you know, type of thing. But then when you talk to people who retire, you know, they talk about how, you know, much their identity was a part of what the work was that they did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, nobody's calling you anymore. And you used to hate that a little bit, and now you wish they would. And
your phone is creepishly silent,
And so you lose part of your identity and have to sort of remake what you know is going to be the last phase of your life.
Yeah.
which is also quite odd.
Yeah.
And with the Wild Women retreat that you and I are doing in March at Luther Ridge, by the way, for the weekend of March 16th, 15th through 17th, there are still openings. Elisa's weekend is totally packed. We don't know why. Maybe it's because of Elise. Not sure.
I do know a lot of women from Trinity were excited about
Probably
signing up for that weekend for
even
sure.
more now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. They were like, "Oh, at least we know we'll be able to see you at Luther Ridge," kind of thing, you know. So that was
Yeah.
sweet.
So one of the things that, as one of the leaders that I'm going to focus on is, especially, I don't know about men, but I know a lot of women talk about how they feel like they become invisible when they retire. And I've thought about that too, which is one of the reasons why I have, other than being, afraid that I might not have the money that I want.
Right.
You just feel like you don't have a place anymore, and maybe people don't care that much what you think
Yeah.
or what you're doing. And I'm just like, I don't know that I want to become invisible,
Yeah.
and how can I not be that? And I think, maybe doing the online stuff, which I've started to build, is one way because, the internet really doesn't care what age you are.
Yeah,
You
true,
know, it doesn't.
true. And I think too, like you can't necessarily talk about pastors transitioning in and out of calls or in and out of their careers without really addressing just how deeply personal this vocation is. I mean, every job has their communities and their close ties, but you know, there just feels like there's a lot more to it in ministry. I mean,
I agree.
your dentist did not sit with you while your husband died, right? Your kid's second grade teacher, well, I don't want to talk, no, teachers are also kind of, you know, it's a deeply personal thing, but you know what I mean? I mean, it's like there you have to pour so much of yourself and your time and your empathy into pastoring a congregation and being involved in a community. And when that's just gone,
And just like
it's,
cut off in one day.
yeah, again, yeah. And it's just like there's no tapering, you
No.
know? I mean, even with my situation at Trinity, when we were all kind of like girding our loins the whole year, right? Like this may or may not work out, you know, kind of thing. First of all, it's hard to function in that mindset because
Right.
you want to prove, for at least myself, I wanted to prove myself. I wanted to prove that I could be a good solo pastor for this congregation, that we would grow under my leadership, which we did. And I wanted to do all that, but that meant just pouring more of myself into this group. And taking it more and more personally. And so when you're basically told you're not enough, we're not going to move forward with you because five people have decided you're not the one for us, but 220 like you. I mean, how do you not take that personally? Like, how do you not
Yeah,
get
because you
this?
can't say, well, at least 250 liked me.
Right.
Great. But they apparently had no voice.
Right,
And the
exactly.
other thing, because I've been in not quite that situation, but sort of left a parish because I just, after 14 years, a lot longer than you were in the place, right? 14 years investment.
Oh, yeah.
And, wasn't really my idea to leave, but I was just seeing the handwriting on the wall that there were a handful of people that just didn't want me to be there anymore. And I kept thinking, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And I'm sure that's happened to a number of our listeners, either who are pastors themselves or members of congregations where they've witnessed this kind of thing. And some of the study that I've been doing to prepare for a couple of workshops and things I'm doing in Lent was, I read again Christianity After Religion by Diana Butler Bass. And she, she really takes the really big view of things, which a lot of us, when we are literally in the trenches in these situations, can't focus on. I mean, all we can see is they don't like me personally. It must be all about me. What am I doing wrong? And I started reading some of her stuff and also thinking through kind of what had happened to me, because she has this one little section where she talks about the first decade of the 21st century and how there was basically one event every year that just made religion seem more and more toxic. And so, I'll just give one example. Like, the first one was the 9/11 terrorist bombings. On the one hand, a bunch of people came back to church after that because, it's like, oh my gosh, America has been bombed. We always bomb other people, and now they're bombing us, or people just came seeking answers to their questions. But then, after a couple of months, that tapered off. Then what started to happen, okay, so basically church was back to normal for most congregation. But then the next stuff that started to happen is that religion got ugly, and people started talking really horribly about Muslims and their horrible religion. And then people like Pat Robertson and Franklin Graham and folks like that started talking about that the reason for 9/11 was because America was being punished for listening too much to feminists and to being too friendly to gays. All right. And so, and that's just one example. And so a lot of people were super turned off by that. And, the decline of religion in America had already started in the 1990s, but still we were like, I would say maybe in the 1990s, we were still blaming the people who weren't coming to church, right? You know, what's wrong with them? So grandmas would say, my grandkids haven't been baptized. I don't know what's wrong with kids these days. They just don't have their priorities in order. That kind of shaming and blaming. But then they, some of them comforted themselves by saying, when they have kids of their own, they'll come back to church. They did not. Okay. So when that theory was blown to
Sorry,
smithereens,
Grandma.
yeah. That theory was blown to smithereens, and the numbers of people coming to worship just kind of kept dropping and dropping and dropping, and like every denomination. I think what happened in the first decade of the 21st century is that we stopped blaming the people who were not coming and started blaming the pastors. You were too fuddy-duddy. People want a cool pastor who, this is, I think this is actually what happened to me in that period. It was a slow drip, right? It was a slow drip. We want somebody who can play guitar and wear a Hawaiian shirt and have a tattoo, right? I mean, somebody who's authentic and all of this kind of stuff. So my point being that a lot of times we wonder, we take it so personally, but so often the issues are actually much, much bigger than us. We're just victims of it. I mean, I am only now, because I left that parish in 2016, I'm only now able to see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me years to stop kind of thinking about it, mm-hmm. you know, replaying conversations in my mind that I had with people, thinking about the kind of ugly stuff that some people said to me. Mm-hmm. Like, you're a good preacher, but you're horrible at pastoral care. Where does that come from?
Yeah.
You know, since when?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think some of that will happen for you as well. And for any of us who struggle in a transition that, you know, isn't one in which you get the nice gold watch at the end of your party.
Right. Yeah.
And you feel bad about what's happened. You second guess who you are and what you're called to do and what your gifts are. And that's not to say that we don't learn from those things, because I bet mm-hmm. you feel like you learned from some of the things that happened, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So all of that can happen, but, you know, and then I think, like, maybe even what you'll, my guess is in the future, you could look back on this and say, you know, maybe 1% of that was me and some of the stuff that I could have done better in my, when I was a baby pastor, right?
Right, yeah.
But congregations right now are scared to death.
Mm-hmm.
Of death.
Yeah. I was gonna right. say, so scared they're kind of killing themselves in a lot of ways.
Right, right. Yeah. And killing their pastors.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even know why.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think they can't articulate it. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that's pretty clear about your situation, and I hope it makes you feel a little bit better, is that it wasn't just that they didn't call you, they didn't call anyone.
Right. Yes.
And so, and they were given about 3 times more names mm-hmm. than most parishes get in a vacancy.
Yeah.
Those names were based on the paperwork that your congregation filled out, in which mm-hmm. they described themselves, mm-hmm. their vision, mm-hmm. and the gifts that they felt like they were looking for in a next pastor. Yes. Clearly, none of that was correct.
Yes.
Because the Synod, according to them, sent them the names of people that matched who they said they are right now and who they want to be.
Yeah.
And so, you know, who knows what it is about all of that that also is a part of it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and I think sometimes, you know, I realized probably 2.5-ish years into my time at Trinity that in terms of like my pastoral style and their congregational expectations, or at least the leaders' expectations, we weren't the best fit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, I certainly had priorities and even things I was hoping they would want to focus on. They had priorities that they wanted me to live and die by. And so, you know, sometimes, and I think, you know, us as pastors and congregations as well could afford to recognize this a little bit more of like, it's like that stupid way Gwyneth Paltrow described breaking up. A conscious uncoupling.
Right.
Is what she called it. And sometimes that does need to happen. Right. Like it's just not a good fit. The shoe doesn't quite fit right.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to kind of ask yourself, how many blisters are we willing to put up with before we just change our shoes?
We apparently put up with a lot.
We put up with a lot. And, you know, there's lots of different reasons for that. I mean, I've certainly watched congregations put up with, you know, whether it's just someone who doesn't really have a lot of gifts for pastoral ministry or congregational ministry. I've seen congregations put up with downright abusive pastors that they mm-hmm. don't even realize are completely manipulating them and not leading them well. And then I've also seen pastors stay in incredibly toxic calls for too long. And so, you know, it kind of goes a lot of different ways. but it is increasingly frustrating when, when you basically are hearing, we're not sure what we want, but we know it's not you. And it's just kind of like, okay, well, tell me why. Like, how can I be better? What can I, help me use this as a professional development moment. Well, you are great, really. There were a couple people that were worried about your administrative style. And it's just like, okay, so I'm just never going to get the real reason. Great. Okay. Awesome. Like, moving on. And,
Because maybe they can't articulate it.
they
Is it
can't.
all a gut feeling?
I mean, for some people, and like, let's be real, it's the fact that I'm a liberal woman in my mid-30s. I had no chance just by walking in the building.
Yeah.
For others, it was the fact that I spent a lot of my time working with the homeless community. I literally, that was something that was used against me constantly. There were others that, even though we got to the same destination, I took a different road and they did not like that. And so, it's like, did I make mistakes? Yes. Was I a perfect pastor? Absolutely not. But, I certainly don't feel like I deserve what happened. I feel like Trinity as a congregation deserves better than how this all shook out. But in the long run, the folks who are pulling the strings in that congregation will get the kind of pastor they want, and they'll either keep that place alive for as long as they're around, or, who knows? And I'm on my way now to a congregation that seems to really appreciate what I bring to the table. And so, I think, like I've said, it'll be the best thing in the long run.
Can you say what you feel like you learned from the experience at Trinity that you took into the interviews in the new place? Did you ask certain questions because of it or listen for certain things?
I did. So, one of the things, and I feel like part of it is a little bit of a symptom of its size. Trinity is not a huge congregation, but it's not like family size. I mean, we worshiped 130 to 150 every Sunday across three services. And so there were a lot of people who, could have passed by each other in the public's, after church and not realize they were both just worshiping in the same place. So one of the questions I always asked call committees was, because everyone, when they introduce themselves in your interview, they always tell you how they got to that church. Oh, me and my wife lived here in 1985, and we were looking, so you always hear that. What I always like to hear is, why did you stay? Like, what? Because church life is not always easy. I mean, being in community in general is not always easy, but
And then there was COVID, but you
and then there
came
was
back.
COVID, but you came back. So, one of the things I always asked is, why are you still here? Why do you stay? Like, a lot of people would say stuff like, oh, well, we just love it here so much, or it's a 2-minute walk from our house, or, whatever. You hear a lot of different
You got a
reasons.
good parking lot.
Got a good parking lot, good youth programs. It's interesting what people are always looking for, because these folks are staying with these congregations through pastoral transitions. I've always said pastors are just a chapter in the
In the
book
life.
that is the congregation, and some chapters are longer than others, some are juicier than others, some are more boring. Like, we can't all be Genesis. Some of us are
Obadiah.
Exactly. So what caught my attention when I was interviewing with St. John, where I'm going to be serving now, was they all had a similar answer to why they've stayed, and it all related to the feeling of familial love within their congregation. And you would hear that a lot with people like, oh, well, this church is a family, and so we support each other. But there was something different in the way they answered it that just felt so incredibly genuine to me. And then they didn't just say like, oh, well, we're a family and we love each other, so yeah, that's why we stay. They had like examples,
Oh, cool.
you know, like people, like one of the women was like, I broke my foot, you know, 2 months ago, and I had more dinners than I could have possibly eaten on my doorstep, like the day after everybody found out. Or, you know, people that were just like, you know, really, they were able to kind of not just say they had these feelings, but they were able to like give me examples of why they felt that way. And so when I asked Trinity, call committee that question, I did not hear that same response. I mean, there were certainly a couple people that said, the people here are so great, they're so friendly, they remembered our names, you know, when we visited, and they've wrapped us up and have loved us so well. And that's what kills me, is that is very much what Trinity is. Trinity is a very loving congregation filled with wonderful people. But I also heard a lot of folks that were just like, well, it's the only ELCA congregation in town, really. Or, well, I've just been here so long, why go anywhere else? You know? And
That's
it's
so
like,
inspiring.
I know. And so, you know, and it was kind of a 50-50 split. And so
Wow.
that kind of made me also look inwardly at how my leadership was affecting that. Why are we not more unified? Like, is it me? Like, am I, you know, like, so I that kind of made me think too, because I was like, man, I really felt like I was fostering a compassionate community here, but maybe it's not as much as I thought. So, you know, I certainly kind of, you kind of learn what to look for, you know, and what to look out for, in your conversations. I mean, money was always a really stressful thing to talk about at Trinity, even though we had more of it than we knew what to do with. But in terms of like fighting for my own worth, that was always an uphill battle. Our financial situation was always made far more complicated than it needed to be. And so my guard was really up the first time I talked to St. John about money. And so, you know, you kind of, but they approached it in a completely different way. So, you know, you certainly kind of figure out what you're looking for and what to look out for, and then you just kind of, you know, learn how to approach things in different ways. But yeah, it certainly was. I mean, not every moment of my 4 years at Trinity was traumatic. A lot of it was really phenomenal. I mean, I was flipping through our private Facebook group for members of the church that we created with COVID. I was looking for something to share with somebody, and I ended up kind of deep scrolling, you know, back however many years, 3 years, and just looking at all that we had done together, you know, all of the random postings we had done during COVID to try to stay connected, and all of the events that we had done together, and all the pictures, and going really far back and seeing how little all the kids were when I started there, and now half of them are taller than me. And, you know, so it was this great reminder that it was a tough 4 years, but it was a really good 4 years too. And a lot of really good ministry did happen. And that's the bittersweet part of it all, you know. And what is what makes saying goodbye so hard. Yeah. It's just a mixed bag. I think it always will be.
And I think, you know, what you were saying earlier about it is I realize that I don't have deep insights into other professions. I'm only seeing them from the outside. But as pastors, because this is just, at least as Protestant clergy, the way that we function is to be pretty intimately involved in the lives of our people.
Yeah, totally.
And so we see them at their sickest. We go to their kids' graduations, or celebrate that. We're there with them when their kids are born, and they don't, it's not like your attorney shows up or your accountant. But they let us into the most intimate parts of their lives. And plus, we've, pretty much been in everybody's home. We know their dog's name.
Whether we want to or not.
I just can't think of any other profession. When doctors used to make house calls mostly, that probably could have been said of them as well. And so not only do we see people at church, but we see them in their homes. Sometimes we visit them at work. Even if it's just to go pick them up because we were going to go out to lunch, they'll introduce you to their, work colleagues and all of that kind of thing. It's like you're part of their family. And so
Do
then
you
to, and then to cut all that off from people, it's like you suddenly divorce everybody.
And then you, it's hard not to look like the bad guy because people still reach out to you, and then you're the one having to say, I really can't be your pastor anymore. I mean, it's like it's a hard thing. And it was fascinating to me too in this exit from Trinity, how many people that I really hadn't interacted much with, I outside of the church walls, right? So folks who were regular attendees, on Sundays, but really that was all I knew them from. And there's a lot of reasons for that. When you're the only pastor with a 200 plus congregation, it's hard even in a year to get around to everybody
Oh, yeah.
because every time you try, someone has a crisis and then they're bumped up the priority list, right? And so you kind of have to mark your place in the directory from where you're making your phone calls and run off to the hospital. But there were folks that were coming up to me or contacting me when they found out about the call committee's decision, or the my last day was kind of released publicly when my last Sunday would be. People that were just like, "You've meant so much to me over these last 4 years. I can't believe this is happening. I'm so angry for you. And I'm just so disappointed." And I mean, and these were folks that I wouldn't have thought could have cared any less who was in the pulpit. But they were, so even when we're not physically in some of these places and in some of these spaces for people's lives, someone's faith is so deeply personal. And when you as the pastor are kind of the representation of that faith in kind of an institutional
As
way,
scary as that is.
as scary as that is, we kind of, we wiggle our way in. And it was, it was really crazy to me just how many people were upset. I even had, this one really blew my mind. A couple who did all of our youth stuff were really, really dedicated to it for a really long time. So I was worked closely with them. And their son-in-law, who I had only really interacted with a handful of times, when I my very first year at Trinity was when their daughter and this guy got married. It was like 2 weeks after I got there, and I remember the dad saying, "We're so sorry we didn't invite you to the wedding." I'm like, "You've literally known me for 2 weeks. It's really okay." But so they got married, and they had a baby, this really this cute little girl, and I baptized her and things like that. But on the Sunday where everybody found out that I was not going to be a candidate anymore, so that was almost a harder Sunday than my last Sunday.
Oh, I bet.
This guy, this the son-in-law of my youth folks, came up to me crying at the end of the service, gave me a huge hug, told me how upset he was how sad he was, thanked me for caring for his daughter and baptizing her and loving on her and all of that, and then just kind of like tearfully walked away. And this is like a guy in his late 20s, early 30s, I mean, who I never in a million years would have thought he'd care who the pastor was at his in-laws' church. But he was devastated. And it's just, it was one of those moments where I was like, wow, this really still is such a powerful vocation for people. You know?
As much
I
as we think
mean,
it's not.
yeah, as irrelevant as it can sometimes feel to be a pastor at a little church on the corner of some street in some town, there are people who just, I don't know, really, really care
And
about
really,
it.
really need what we're providing. And I think, that's a great lesson as well. Even painful transitions can show you that. And then to kind of carry that on into the next place where you are, I always kind of look at, especially because doing the interim work, we're about every year, year and a half, you're in a different place. And so I pretty much always, like the first Sunday that I'm at a new place, I look out on the congregation, and of course, you don't know anybody's name yet or anything about them. And I say to myself, some of these people are going to be really good friends of mine. I don't know who they are yet, but I know that there are some people here that I'm going to end up getting really close to. And that happens as well. And when you were talking about, the son-in-law. I had a son-in-law experience when I left my last full-time parish as well. And it was his wife grew up in the congregation, and his in-laws were very, very active. And he was actually Jewish. So I did this Lutheran Jewish wedding for them in Charleston. And they lived then in Los Angeles after they got married, but I left on Christmas Day, which was a Sunday that year.
Oh, I remember.
Yes. And they came back because they were coming back to visit family anyway. And it was just really, I mean, obviously Christmas Day is going to be pretty low attendance anyway. And so there was just this small group of us that gathered in the reception hall after the service with champagne. And he was the most articulate person, doing this big toast and everything. And because I had worked really hard with them on their wedding service, because my God, he had so many questions. And so many issues. And they were such wonderful, progressive, liberal couple. In fact, one of the gifts that they gave to me for doing the wedding was Hillary Clinton's book.
I love that.
I'm like, thanks, you guys.
Thanks, guys. Love it.
But I think that's what's so, and for all of the transitions in this work that we do, just remembering that we don't always know whose lives we touch or how deeply, because you can have people 20 years later come back and say, oh, by the way, when I was a teenager and you were my pastor, I thought this, 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 and this, and it was so wonderful. And you think, really?
I thought you just slept through every
I
service.
know. So, I think it really is a God thing, as we like to say nowadays.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, and
And
there's an
that's the kind of fuel that should really drive our engines.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and then there's always the negative flip side of realizing who's the most quiet, you know, when all these things. I certainly noticed very quickly who wouldn't meet my eye line when I was giving communion, or who kind of stopped coming to church those last few weeks, or who didn't leave a farewell card in the basket. I mean, some people just probably forgot. I would have been a person that just forgot to leave a card, but I mean, what was it? I think it was Martin Luther King that said, you won't always remember the words of your enemies, but you'll remember the silence of your friends. And there were certainly there also is moments of like, man, I really thought I meant more to you. So it is an interesting like little dynamic. It's just kind of a constant kind of guessing game in a lot of ways, which makes this vocation so amazing and so crazy and sometimes painful at the same time. You know,
And I
it's
think, yeah, and
just,
it can also make it pretty exhausting.
oh, it's so exhausting. Oh my God. I don't think I realized how tired I was really. Until kind of getting this break, even though it's hard to call it a break because we've been having to move and all of that. And that's a thing too that I kind of wanted to scream from the mountaintops a couple times with this whole thing, is it's like, I'm having to upend my life now because of a decision you made. And there was like very little recognition of that. Like, people would say to me, like, you're gonna land on your feet. You're gonna be fine. You're gonna be fine.
You got the platitudes.
I'm worried about us. My gosh, we're gonna tear each other apart. But you're gonna be fine. Everything's gonna work out. It's gonna be great. God has great things in store for you. And I'm like, yeah, I know that. But it was really kind of hoping it would be in Chattanooga. I mean, just kind of the lack of thought around that, or perceived lack of thought. I mean, I certainly didn't have people coming up to me saying like, hey, we realize that you've built a community here and that you guys bought a house 18 months ago and that you're in the middle of IVF here with a doctor in Chattanooga and that you have friends here that you really care about and stuff you're really involved in, but we're just going to say no anyway. There was no recognition of just how much Adam and I both. I mean, Adam's having to change jobs. Adam's, kind of a real victim in kind of in this crossfire. There just wasn't a recognition of that, which granted, in most professions there isn't, right? It's not like the boss that's firing you from Walmart is like, sorry, I know you have friends here, but like you're not doing a very good job, so you got to go.
But here again, your manager at Walmart doesn't know your spouse's name.
Right. Right. That's the point I was trying to make.
Doesn't know how many kids you have, doesn't know you've
Right.
got a sick mom at home.
Yeah,
So
exactly.
when people do know, because goodness knows they know all the intimate details of our lives usually,
Yeah, or they
partly
desperately
because
want
we
to.
share it. We share it in our publications and we share it in our sermons and our Bible studies. I do that. And so yeah, we feel like we've really shared ourselves and stuff doesn't matter. And I think the thing that's hard for us because we talk about it and understand it as a call rather than a job that we've been hired into. And it's hard for us to say sometimes in the midst of all of that, this was a personnel decision. Right? We don't talk about personnel with about our rostered leaders. You know, the organist might be personnel and the parish assistant and all that kind of stuff, but we kind of see the pastors differently. So
It's so
that part
deep
can
and
hurt, like,
personal.
oh, now I'm just an employee. Well, part of it is now you know how they feel.
I know exactly. Yeah, it is, it's crazy. I mean, it just continues to prove that this is one of the weirdest vocations a person can have, of being kind of a spiritual leader, pastor, whether it's pastor or rabbi, an imam, whatever. Choosing this work is risky, really risky. But you know, I think just kind of we all know no matter what your job, no matter what your life, no matter whatever, transitions and change are really hard. And but there's also a lot of hope and joy on the other side of those doors as well. And I certainly am excited about next steps and this next opportunity and this next call. I had a friend of mine from seminary who I saw at in Phoenix when we were at the conference in
Oh, yeah.
Phoenix. And you know, I was kind of telling her about what was going on at Trinity and some of the frustrations. And she looked me dead in the eye and she said, "Elise, nothing is more affirming than a second call."
Oh, wow.
And you know what, Marissa,
If you're
you're right.
listening.
If you're listening, you were right. So
Yeah.
at least as of right now, I mean, we're in the honeymoon phase, but
And you'll be a solo pastor.
and I'll be a solo pastor. I really am not sure I'll ever want to do any kind of an associate gig again. I just,
They're
it's,
almost set up for failure.
they're really set up for failure,
Unless you're in a really,
especially
really large congregation.
really, really large congregation with like five people on staff or something. But everyone I know who is an associate or was an associate had some traumatic story of their leaving or being forced out or whatever. And yeah, it's just, yeah, no, hashtag never again.
I think the church, at least talking about our Lutheran congregations, we never really learned how to do that in terms of we would play the game and say things like, well, we're really going to function sort of as co-pastors. Didn't you say that too? We're just going to function as co-pastors and we're going to share things equally, but human beings don't operate that way. They need to know who's the person in charge and where does the buck stop. And we can't see it stopping with two people and or three people or whatever a congregation might try to do. And then you add in all of our human imperfections and the ways that we are jealous of each other's gifts. While we can talk the spiritual talk, we can't always do the walk. And, we really want to a lot of times. But, frankly, I think, a lot of associates are called to basically, while there might be a position description, hopefully there is, but often the bottom line is do whatever the senior pastor doesn't want to do.
Or can't.
Or can't.
And I mean, and you know, not just all that, but we see more often than not, senior pastors are older men and associates are younger women or first call men. And you know, or those of us who might be, quote, difficult to find a call for, you know, LGBTQ candidates, candidates of color, female candidates, you know, things like that. Those of us who are further away from the stereotypical middle-aged straight white guy, that you're more likely to land in an associate spot because you're just not taken as seriously. And you know, the pastor who served in the associate position at Trinity before me was a younger white guy, straight white guy, and he even struggled being the associate because it is, it's hard for people to see any kind of like junior position with any kind of respect or recognize any kind of authority that they may have.
Well, yeah, and and sometimes folks in the congregation don't realize that they play into that, so they call the perceived senior pastor or whatever, Pastor so and so, and the associate by first name only.
Oh, I can't tell you how many times sitting in a meeting with my co-pastor and myself, and the people would always, someone would always say, "Well, what do you think, Pastor?" And just look at Stan, or you know, "Well, Pastor, what's, you know, this or that?" And I finally, when that would happen, if they just said pastor, like just put it into
You
the
put it in the
meeting,
air.
put it in the air, I would yell out, "Which one? Which one are you talking about? Which pastor? Who are you asking?" And there are people that kind of finally caught on, but it was just like so infuriating. I'm like, my God, like, come on, guys. Like I remember when I was early on in my, in this last year of kind of taking over, I had someone come to me into my office, an older woman, and she kind of said, she was like, I just think you're so great. And I'm so glad you're still here to kind of pastor us during this time and all of that. She said, but I know that you just don't have the same training and experience that Stan had. And
Oh my God.
I finally just said, you know what? There's no separate seminary for associates and seniors. Every pastor, every ordained person gets the same degree and says the same promises. So, while yes, he had far more years of experience than I did at that time, even now still, but it was like I'm just as trained for this as he would have been 4 years into his ministry. And she just like kind of short-circuited. It was like I didn't say it that bluntly. I was a little kinder, but you could tell she was just kind of like, her wheels were spinning a little bit. But yeah,
Yeah,
it's
golly,
crazy.
you wonder kind of like, what was she thinking?
I don't know.
I
That's
mean,
just,
years of experience, okay,
yeah.
but
But
that
like,
also doesn't mean that you couldn't stay there.
right. Exactly. I know it. It's just so wild to me. But yeah, I mean, what are you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
People be crazy. That's the other thing too in these transitions is it's just an extension of how people think that they can just say whatever they want to someone when they're their pastor. It's like, I'm a human being, man.
Yeah, I don't know if other professions get that in the same way that we do,
I doubt
where
it.
people will just say anything to you.
I know. Other professions chime in. Chime in. I'd love to, maybe hear. I because I don't want to walk around saying we've got the craziest job if we don't.
No, we don't.
You know, I'm not trying to
We're fortunate in many, many ways.
We are. Yes, we are.
You
And
know,
for
so
the
I get, you
Lord.
know, I certainly give thanks for all of that. But
What
yeah,
have we learned today, Mom?
what have we learned today? Well, I think that I'm thinking about folks that might be listening to this, who are doing what you and I have done, which is keep sitting in a call that we knew we probably should get out of, but really wanting to stay, but also not wanting to go through the transitions that would be required. You know, for you, it was, oh my gosh, I've got to sell a house I just bought. I've got to leave a town I love. I've got to leave the friends that I made here, all those kinds of things. And for me, it was, hey, I just always thought that I would retire in this congregation. What if I can't, you know, and I can't move from where I am now because I've taken over my parents' house and renovated it. And, you know, this is the home territory. What if I don't find another call? Or there isn't anything available to me anymore other than a tiny little rural congregation with 15 people in worship. Would I be okay with that? And yeah, so things felt limited, and yet I would say I probably should have left that congregation 4 years before I did. You know, so I would say, you know, if you're starting to see some handwriting on the wall and nothing that you've done, like talking to your mutual ministry committee or talking to your bishop or talking to the people that seem to not like you. If none of that has worked, you know, be honest with yourself and say, you know what, I can either leave now under fairly good conditions, or I can potentially leave in some really bad ways. It'll only get worse. It's like if you don't address the cancer right now, and think, well, maybe it'll just go away. Especially if you've got some toxic situations going on, they don't go away. They just get worse and they spread. Unless literally it's only one person who's toxic and that person, they would have to die because they can't just move away because then they keep, you know, dipping into the congregation and trying to get other people upset and all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, be real, be real with yourself, be honest with yourself. I mean, I did start looking for, you know, working with my bishop and looking for a new call probably 7 months before I actually left. But nothing was out there. And it wasn't just that I had options and turned them down. There really wasn't anything out there. And so then I did have to just leave with nothing. And especially, you know, because I was in my 50s at that point, that's a scary, because once you get into your 50s even, congregations will look at you and think you're too old to be called. You know, unless it's like a super big congregation where they expect their senior pastor, you know, to be the elder statesman or whatever. But even that's going away now.
So as someone who does now intentional interim work, what is helpful for you to have in place when you come into a congregation that has just said goodbye to a pastor, whether it was a fond goodbye or a traumatic goodbye? What do you like to see on the desk on your first day as an interim? What, because I mean, for me, I know I asked you, I really want to leave the next interim a note. Would that be appropriate? Or do you think that would be helpful? And you said, yes. So I did. And I tried to leave things, you know, logistical things of like, here's where I left off in confirmation. You know, here's who you need to talk to if this comes up. Here's your main altar guild person. But, you know, because you, for me at least, it was a very sensitive leaving. And so I was nervous about crossing a boundary. But I did leave a note for the interim and I just said, hey, they're in a really fragile place right now. If you need to know more, these are great, trustworthy people that can tell you, that can tell you what happened. Take them out for coffee in your first week. And get that information. So, what do you think is good for someone either coming, leaving or maybe coming into a new call as an interim? What do you like to see kind of on the desk on your first day?
I can tell you what I like to see by speaking it about it in the negative. What I will say is, let's see, I'm in my fifth interim place. I always hoped to see maybe some files laid out, maybe a letter written to me or whatever. And what I have found every single time is zero. No files about anything. A cleared out office for the most part. Any files left in a file drawer, if there are any, were just trash. I've walked into one office and every drawer, every cabinet was just full of junk. I mean, old kid craft stuff, pipe cleaners. I mean, and I mean like practically used pipe cleaners. Parish records that haven't been kept in 12 years. Every single time it's like 12 years. And I think part of the reason for that, it's not coincidental. I think it's because that was around the time when a lot of congregations went from doing the handwritten book to these computer programs. And so then they abandoned anything. But then you say, okay, it's all online now. No, it's also as bad as the cabinet with the pipe cleaners.
Right. Well, then at least, yeah, or it's like at least, okay, well, then there needs to be a piece of paper with
Oh,
usernames
that
and
would be nice
passwords.
too.
Yeah. I handed
It's
all that
the
over to my
lack, and
council
I don't
people.
know if that, because it seems so discourteous, for one thing. I mean, you know that somebody is coming after you, whether it's an interim or even the guy who's supplying the next Sunday,
Right, exactly.
who might want to know where the sacristy is. But I have been positively astounded at the lack of anything left. And the poor parish administrators and church secretaries often don't have a clue themselves as to where anything is. I'm so like, so where are the personnel files? Who has this? Who has that? And I don't know if it's because people are leaving under not so great circumstances. And they're just like, I'm out of here. I don't care. Let them have it.
Let him have it. Let it all burn down.
It all burn down, you
Yeah.
know.
I certainly struggled with that. I was like, I could just delete all these files and say, figure it out yourself. Or, so I mean, I put a packet together that I gave to my executive or to the executive team at Trinity and said, here's where I left off with confirmation. Here's all this. Here's where some projects that I left off were. Here are the people
I
that are
hope they didn't just
currently.
throw it away.
I hope so too. Here are the people who are actively sick and will need pastoral care attention. And then I left, my note for the interim with the church administrator, and I said, please give this to her on her first day. And took myself off of all the administrative social media platforms, and yeah, but there was a part of me that was just like, whatever.
Oh, sure.
But then there, but you know, and it's one of those things too, where you are kind of, when you do leave, when you're forced out, there is a real struggle within you of like, you care so deeply about this place. You want to see them succeed. Because for me, there were a lot of people that were like, well, I'm just not going to come here anymore. If this is how they're going to treat a pastor that I love, like, this is just, I'm not going to come here anymore. And there was a part of me that wanted to encourage that. Like, yeah, don't go. I was like, especially with some of the young families that, they really were proud of themselves for, which came in during my tenure. I was like, yeah, get out of there. Here's a list of other churches you can go check out. Go bless them with your presence. But then there was another part of me that was like, selfishly though, if I leave and this big power vacuum appears and everything crumbles, what does that say about my ministry? And so, then I was like, well, maybe you should stick it out, but hey, maybe you should get on council. So then there was the flip
Get
side of
more
encouraging
involved.
people to get
Yeah,
more
get more involved,
involved.
not less. You're in this mess because you weren't paying
Because you weren't
attention.
paying attention. So, it
Well, and it
is
reflects back
interesting.
on us too. Obviously, you know, I probably grumbled some negative things about the previous pastors and all the offices that I was having to dust the desk and clean out the stupid drawers and
I know, exactly.
you know, it's just like, yep, you were just getting out, that's
You are
all.
definitely out. And for some people, like that's all they can do. Like when it truly is a toxic thing and they're chased out with pitchforks and torches, it's like, okay, yeah, they just like you can practically see see the trail of, the tire marks that they left
Right.
on the parking lot. But, I think, yeah, I mean, transitions are so particular and so specific to their each context. And I think, not to sound too cliched, but the best thing we can do is just have as much grace as possible with each other
Yes. Yeah.
and
Have as
just
much grace as you can muster in your leave taking, because my guess is that unless you have a church that is truly just peopled with demons, there's a lot of people there that you've loved and cared for and married and baptized and whose moms you've buried and all of that. And you need to also think about them, even if you feel like they didn't think about you.
Well, that's what I said to people, in my last few weeks, because a lot of people kind of said to me, I don't know how you're still here.
Right.
I don't know how you're showing up every day. If this happened to me, I'd be out. I wouldn't come back in the building.
Right.
And I what I would what I said to them was, you deserve a pastor. You deserve a good pastor. For the time I have left, you deserve to have my full attention
My best self.
and my best self. And especially because my last few weeks was Christmas. So I was like, do you want this Christmas to be the Christmas that your pastor just was like, goodbye?
I
Like,
know.
no. And it was the second Christmas in a row they were having to say goodbye to a pastor. And this time far more dramatic. But I will say, doing that certainly took a toll on me. It was
Right.
hard. It was really, really hard. But I'm glad I did it because I was able to leave with my head held high and with the support of a lot of
Nothing to be
people.
ashamed of.
Nothing to be ashamed of, knowing full well I gave it my best. And we'll continue to give my best to this next congregation.
Well, why don't we close out with you saying what you're most excited about starting to do in the new place?
I'm excited because I feel like I'm going to be able to be. I'm going to start off with kind of a selfish one. I am excited because I feel like I'm going to be more genuinely myself with this congregation than I felt like I was ever allowed to be. They have embraced me and my preaching style. They've embraced Adam already. They've embraced my love and passion for serving the homeless. For that to be a check in the pro column and not the con column is real refreshing.
Yes.
So I'm excited about that. I'm excited about their just joy and enthusiasm around being a community together. I'm excited to continue to foster that. And I'm excited to get to know Abington as a town. I'm really lucky. One of my best friends lives there. So we have friends going in, which is a lifesaver. I don't think we'd be nearly as excited about this if that wasn't the case. Shout out Ashley and Ben. And I'm just excited to start off someplace feeling like I'm at the adult table. Starting at Trinity as the associate kind of felt like an internship 2.0, no matter how hard I tried. And so to be somewhere and to have kind of my knowledge and experience and pastoral authority like actually respected from the beginning is really cool. And I'm excited and I hope I don't let them down.
You won't.
And I'm excited to get to know everybody. People have asked me, what are the first things you're going to do? I'm like, I'm going to pull out the directory and I'm going to start calling people.
Right. I'm going to get to know you.
I'm going to get to know you. I mean, it was really, really kind of cool. Even when I was just there last weekend to lead worship and preach and kind of like your final tryout, right? They were like, well, this is how, you know, this is how we've normally done it, but if you want to change it, we can. And I'm like, I'm not changing anything for at least in terms of, you know, how we do worship. I said, I need to see how y'all are comfortable, and then we can start shaking things up a little bit.
Unless
But
it's just downright heretical, which it
unless it's
probably
just
isn't.
right, exactly. Like, unless it's just like not working for anybody. I said, because they were like, well, the assistant minister usually does this, but if you want us to change it, we can. And I was just like, we don't need to do any of that.
Don't panic.
Don't panic. All is
I
well.
can fit
So,
in.
yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm very excited. The people of St. John seem very excited, and yeah, it's gonna be really good. And I know Trinity will be okay. You know, the core of that congregation is a group of wonderful, faithful, kind people. You know, whoever their next pastor is will have a little bit of work cut out for them. But I also feel like I left a place, they're doing very well. You
That's
know,
good.
they have some interpersonal stuff they need to work out, like most places do. Certainly some trust that needs to be rebuilt.
And hopefully they've learned some things too, whether they could, admit them out loud or not.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you know, I think we'll all be all right.
Well, on behalf of You're on Mute and our entire staff, I want to say congratulations on this fairly smooth transition. Our next episode, who knows where it might be coming from? Elise might be in Abingdon or she might be in a U-Haul truck. But
Who knows?
who knows? But she's going to be on the move.
That's right. That's right. Yes. So thank you so much, Mom, and the rest of the staff. You all are so kind. I'm excited, and yeah, coming at you pretty soon from Southwest Virginia. All
That's right. Well, we'll see you next time.
right, thanks everybody.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bye.